Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Everyone, and thank you for listening to a special episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the writer, the producer, and host of this show. Tonight, I have the privilege of speaking to and exploring the topic of light body travel with Jason Kish. Most of us might think of light body travel as our spirit going into the unknown, taking a journey by leaving our bodies, or better yet, maybe even interacting with some other spirits while we sleep. To help us all understand this concept in greater detail, Jason is Skyping with me tonight, so if the sound quality is not at its best at times, please forgive both of us. Hello, Jason. Jason, where might you be Skyping from this evening?
Minnesota.
Minnesota. Ah, yes, the land of 10,000 lakes and thousands of mosquitoes. Well, it just so happens that I am and was a native of the Twin Cities in Minnesota for many, many years, and I have to say I don't miss the traffic, the snow, or the frostbite. Been there, done that. However, it looks to me like I may be moving back to Minnesota in the next few months, so I am going to miss dearly here in Indiana the weather, the traffic, and of course, no frostbite. Jason has been exploring consciousness, otherwise known as out-of-body state, since the age of 5. After many decades of losing memories of common nightly activities, he discovered what he believes to be a natural, inherent human ability to explore consciousness through our brain waves. Well, Jason has always had the desire to discover the answers to life's greatest mysteries, and has always also yearned in finding the truth. He believes that truth does exist and is not subjective. So Jason feels that the truth can be objective, leading us down our paths, helping us to form our inherent beliefs. Which brings us all to this one question. If you ask the universe for answers, will it deliver? Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this is certainly an interesting topic and one that needs further discussion. So why don't we first set some ideas in motion for our audience and talk a little bit about the exploration of consciousness from your point of view, okay?
Absolutely. I found there's many ways to explore consciousness. The methods I've observed and studied have involved a culmination of my own firsthand experiences, understanding of others' teachings, writings, sharing my own experiences with and about others, and attending several workshops. From this, I've been able to dedicate a lot of time in the past 3.5 years to learning and seeking truth by exploring consciousness via lucid dreams, out-of-body experiences, visions, and light body travel, also known as astral travel. While I'm in the process of expanding the ideas centered around light body travel, I'm working to complete an ebook in the upcoming months to teach those interested in expanding their consciousness and to allow for the exploration of their multidimensional existence.
Ooh, wow, that sounds interesting and frightening all at the same time there, Jason. Why don't we start a few questions here and have you tell us a little bit more. So let's start with the first question. Something you mentioned in your biography on your website, and that very first question to me was that truth exists, does exist, and is not subjective. Could you expand on these thoughts for us a little, please?
Sure. Over the past few decades, the New Age community has seemed to have complicated and diluted the meaning of truth. They've kind of shrouded it in a level of, I don't want to say secrecy, but in mystery. The way I've come to understand truth is that which has happened in the past, that which is happening now, and that that will happen. And then these things, as they happen, they become part of the universal Akashic record. It's simply a matter of, you know, when people talk about truth, they want to discuss the nature of our being, the nature of our existence or the universe. When I mention truth, I'm simply talking about events that have happened in relation to being able to recognize patterns in the mind, and using that pattern recognition in conjunction with your creativity or your right brain to basically elevate your level of intuition. So when I say truth, I don't mean in a mystical sort of way. I just mean events that have happened and events that actually are happening. So
That's interesting. I'm just trying to swirl a few thoughts in my head here as we go along. For that one, would you say, and I just have a quick thought here for you about that when you talk about truth and the patterns that we form in our minds. Would you say that there's anything here that might be different from, could it vary with people regarding their perceptions about what truth actually is? Because we all seem to form our own impressions or our own perceptions based on our experiences. So are you bringing this to us or this thought to us based on just the idea that we all have a similar consciousness or just the fact that we are forming similar patterns? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, when people have mystical experiences and dreams and you know, out-of-body experiences, a lot of those things are subjective, and people will interpret those obviously in different ways. When I say truth, I'm not speaking about subjective or mystical experiences or perception. I'm just talking, you know, specifically about world events and things that can be known by the collective as truth. You know, for example, I think most people can agree that World War II or World War I happened. You know, those are simple truths, and that the sun is in the sky and the sky is blue. You know, and simple facts like that. Those are the truths that I'm talking about. Not necessarily things that are subjective or in the mind of the person experiencing it.
Okay, interesting. Good. Jason, can you tell us a little bit about, you mentioned this concept of astral projection. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is? I guess most of us know it to be what, out-of-body travel. Can you expand on that a little bit for us, please?
Yes. So astral travel is simply the conscious awareness of a subconscious activity that happens at least a couple times throughout the night for most people. Every living sentient being on the planet or possibly in the universe has an energetic field. This energetic field is capable of sustaining physical life. It draws from the universal life force and helps to shape the physical world. This energetic field has the capacity to operate independently of the physical body, but unfortunately, most of the time, it's operated through the subconscious mind and the superconscious mind. And as many of you probably already know, most people aren't, you know, in touch or aren't aware with what's happening at the subconscious level. So as we move into higher states of consciousness, or we move inside and we become more introspective and we try to connect with that higher part of our mind, we become aware of some of the things that happened in the higher parts of our mind. So astral travel is you know, simply the conscious awareness of something that's happening at a deeper part of our mind.
I'm going to throw in just a quick question here for you. So the deeper part of your mind. Okay, I've been working with several psychics over the last, 30 years. And is there some difference in how they maybe utilize their energy field versus how, I'm going to say, the average or the most common person utilizes theirs? Because is there really a difference? Because they seem to know how to use their brain maybe a little bit differently, or have this gift to use their brain differently. Do you have any thoughts on why it seems like psychics in general have a greater ability to use their energy fields or their brain a little bit differently than most of us?
I have my suspicions. I believe people who are capable of psychic activity and things of that nature, they are, well, first off, I should say that 99% of the people that live on the planet are all part, well, not 99%, everyone on the planet is connected to the universal consciousness, or what some people call the collective. It's basically a collection of all of the thoughts, actions, and emotions of all living things on the planet. This collective is kind of like a master database of all information. And I believe that psychics and people who are capable of this activity are better able to tap in to that. I don't know if their mind is more open, or they have a better connection to source or this collective of information. But I believe what they're doing is they're simply tapping into the collective database or collective of information of all that has happened and all that is happening.
Interesting. Good. No, that's interesting. I've always wondered. I find it absolutely amazing in dealing with, and again, I've dealt with a lot of really, really good psychics that, to me, have been, I don't know, they've just been so good at their readings, especially when I don't test them, but I mean, me and myself and my life is a test for some of these, but I just find that their ability to be able to do this, and one in particular I'm thinking of, she lives in Australia, she can tap into this so well, just from my writing to her and not ever speaking to her. It's just kind of unbelievable. Let's go back to the age of 5 here for you, shall we? So you've been interested in consciousness since the age of 5. Can you tell us what was the nature of your awakening and how did it happen?
Well, it happened in an interesting order. I guess I'll start back from when I was 5. As far back as I can remember, I would wake up, or I shouldn't say wake up, I would become aware while floating up into the air outside of my house. It would almost always be that I was floating towards a set of power lines, because I had some power lines right outside my house. And I would float up towards these power lines and I would start to panic. And so when I reached the power lines, I would try to, you know, squirm my body and try to maneuver it in a way such that I wouldn't touch the wires. And after I would make it past these power lines, I would be able to take control of the direction. And at the time, I thought these were just amazing, amazing dreams. They were always so real. I had, I wouldn't say full waking consciousness, but on a pretty high level of awareness, I knew that I was actually flying through the air. And I would soar up into the sky, into the clouds, but I would always be a little bit afraid of going too far up, because I didn't know if I would be able to find my way home. So, you know, I would soar over the sky and look down. I could see the city lights. I could see houses. I could see trees. I could see everything. And growing up, I had these experiences. And when I would wake up in the morning, I was so convinced that I could actually fly that I would sometimes go out into the street and stand up and hold my arms up into the air and focus the way I did in these dreams to see if I could actually get off the ground. You know, and I never mentioned them to my parents or anyone else because, you know, I thought they were just really cool dreams. So when I was 12 years old, they pretty much stopped. And I started, you know, living my life. And, you know, when I became an adult, I entered the adult world and forgot about all that stuff. And then around the age of 40, I had started to take better care of my body. I started to drink more water. I started to lose weight. I stopped drinking, I stopped smoking, I was exercising, I was just treating my body a lot better. And prior to that, about a decade, probably starting at about 31, 32 years old, I started having what's called sleep paralysis. It's where you wake up in the middle of the night, completely aware and completely conscious, but your body is completely paralyzed and you can't move. And it's actually a very terrifying experience. And you can't move at all. Your eyes are wide open. You're looking around your room. You can perceive energies in your room, but you can't do anything about it. And it's absolutely terrifying. So I had that for about 10 years, and I didn't know what it was. I just come to, you know, accept the fact that it was a weird thing in my life. And then on November 13th of 2013, I was on my couch, and I had an episode of this paralysis, but this one was quite different. It was almost as if there was a surge of electricity going through my entire body, and I could feel vibrations almost at the molecular level. And at the time, I thought I was having a seizure. So I started to wiggle my pinky, and I worked my way out of the paralysis, and I sat up for a minute and thought about it and went back to bed. And then 2 days later, it happened again. This time, I was sleeping next to my wife. And it certainly didn't hurt, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a frightful experience, so I decided to let it finish and see what would happen. So these vibrations passed. And soon after that, it felt like my body was spinning in a vortex, and I was expanding and contracting, and there was all sorts of strange physiological sensations going on. And then my feet started to float up, and then my legs, and then my hips, and shortly after that, I found myself floating up in the air with my feet by the ceiling and my head by the pillow, and I thought I was dying. So then the terror started to creep in. And when you're in this paralysis, you can barely speak. In your mind, you're screaming at the top of your lungs, but only a faint whisper is coming out. So I started to scream out to my wife at the time, and fortunately, she was a light sleeper, and she heard me. So she started shaking me, and I dropped back down into my body, and I sat up, and I told her what had happened. And, you know, of course, she was a little bit freaked out, but my curiosity had been piqued. Because I had just experienced something that was, you know, I didn't die, so I knew that was, you know, not really a factor. And I started researching my symptoms on the internet, and I found that, you know, tens of thousands of other people were experiencing this as well. They had the same symptoms, the same experiences. There were a lot of parallels. So then I connected with some people on Facebook, and we started talking, and it led me down a rabbit hole, and I've been exploring and researching ever since.
While you're speaking, I was just trying to remember. I've had about 100 different types of experiences with the paranormal. And while you were kind of describing some of your incidents here, especially the one where you saw yourself floating up in the air and then bouncing back or dropping back into your body, I don't know. I'm just trying to sit and think to myself. I have a chapter in one of my books that describes my experience at the Groveland Hotel, which is outside of Yosemite National Park in California, where I woke up. It was a full moon night, and I wasn't thinking much of it. I was in a known haunted hotel it had like four different apparitions in it, apparently, but I wasn't in the most haunted room. In fact, I didn't think I was in a haunted room at all. And here to find out I was, but I woke up bouncing on the bed, and I know that the story is that there was some kind of a, I don't know, gambler or angry guy that liked to hide under the bed in that room, and if you snored too loudly, he would have a tendency to shake the bed very violently, or in my case, I found myself bouncing on the bed. And sometimes I wonder if when I woke up, if I was really bouncing on the bed or if I felt my conscious spirit bounce back in me on the bed. And so when you talk about this, I'm like, you know, I've never really explored outside that thought before until you started talking about some of your experiences, but that might be one of it. Now, of course, here's the other one that you bring up is sleep paralysis. And of course, I've had situations where some of my homes have been with a presence that became very attached to me. And in one case, or actually a couple cases, I woke up with the feeling of hands around my throat choking me. Although I did discover in the room that I was in, our master bedroom, that that this ghost or entity or whatever it was, again, seemed to, one of them seemed to have it out for me. But when you talk about sleep paralysis, is it possible, and I'm going to ask you a question like this, if this is something that might sound familiar to you, but is it possible to be able to, I found myself when I was younger, I fell out of the bed. But interestingly enough, when I tried to get up from falling out of the bed, I had absolutely no strength whatsoever to literally get my body back up to crawl back into bed. And I recalled taking my elbows and dragging myself with my utmost strength to bring my body back into bed. So here's a question for you, just from that experience of mine. Is it possible that my consciousness was quieted or not in me or whatever? Because why is it that I probably could not get my, could, I just didn't have any ability to move my body? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, actually. And that goes kind of into a nice transition. The human energy field is made from different layers. There's the etheric body, which is what ghosts primarily are made of. There's the astral body and then the mental body. As you go out, these energetic bodies or copies of ourselves become less dense and they vibrate at a higher frequency. The etheric body, or also known as the life force energy body, is supposed to technically, and this is open to interpretation, but the etheric body is supposed to always be attached to the physical body. And when the etheric body, on the rare occasions, it does separate from the physical body, they're called etheric projections, and I've had many of them, and they can be very clumsy. And it's because it's such a low vibration, high density energetic body. And these etheric projections, I kind of liken it to wading through thick molasses while completely blind and intoxicated. It's really hard to maneuver in this etheric body, and it's just a very sloppy type of experience. You'll trip over yourself, you'll fall over, you can't stand up, you find you don't have much strength at all. So, you know, what people sometimes perceive as something or a certain type of experience might actually be another. So I would venture to say that was probably an out-of-body experience you had.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that. I think what was the most frightening about that was just the paralysis that I had, though, and then the ability for me to not be able to get back up off the floor, and I literally had to like crawl with my arm or my elbows back into bed with all my strength. Yeah, it was just really bizarre. I've never really forgotten about that moment. Did we answer the question yet, where our conscious goes and what do we see on our journey? Have we answered that yet?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Would you tackle that one for me here? Where does our conscious go and what do we see on our journey?
At the beginning of my journey, when I was 41, most of the time when I left my body, I would see what some people call the, Robert Monroe called it locale one. It's basically it's the physical world. Your consciousness shifts from your physical body into one of your energetic bodies, and you can actually perceive physical objects. Essentially, you can move around like a ghost. But as you progress down this path and you learn more and you advance a little bit further, for some reason we tend to venture into some of the higher, more beautiful places. If you think of consciousness as a radio tuner, it's what we perceive and where we go depends on where our consciousness is phased into or focused. Robert Monroe coined the phrase, or he called them focus levels. And so right now, you and I, about 100% of our consciousness is tuned in or phased into our physical bodies. When we go to sleep at night, our consciousness phases away from the physical body and can go many places. Some of the places are more thought responsive, and we have more creativity where we can manifest things through thoughts and intentions. And other places are filled with what are called consensus realities that they're basically made. These environments are constructed of millions and possibly billions of other thought forms and intentions. So some places are we have more creative control, and other places we have very little creative control. So where we go and what we see or perceive is dependent on, you know, our level of consciousness and sometimes where we are on our journey. So,
A question for you on this. So let's delve into that question a little bit deeper and answer a question that a lot of people always ask. So we know that energy does not die when we die, okay? And my father had passed away this past December, and an experience that my family members, a couple of them, had out in the hospice waiting room was that there was an elderly man sitting in a wheelchair, humped over, looked like he had extreme Alzheimer's or dementia, just obviously very incapable. And when my dad passed away, at that very moment, my brother was standing near a door where there's, of course, a window looking out it, and he turned around and he saw this elderly man. Literally, he sat up and his arms started to wave back and forth like, "Hi, here I am, here I am, look at me, here I am." And he just stood there looking at this older man, just dumbfounded. It was at the very moment that my dad had died. And, of course, the question had come to me from my family members. And, of course, others want to know, too. Is it possible for someone who has just passed away and where their conscious goes, is it possible for them to take over a life being that is very incapable and try to demonstrate that they still exist in this person's body before? And then as soon as my, I don't think it lasted very long, and then the man slumped right back down to the way he was and was, you know, back to being very, you know, very disabled in his chair. What are your thoughts about that, especially when people die? People always want to know, where do our conscious goes? Well, is it possible to take over someone else's body? That's a question for you.
I have no personal experience with that, but I do know that, well, I shouldn't say I know, but it seems entirely plausible. You know, the first thing I would imagine most people want to do when they pass away is make sure that their loved ones know that they still exist. Robert Monroe, I don't know if any of your listeners are aware of Robert Monroe, but he was kind of the pioneer of out-of-body travel starting back in the 1950s. He had many experiences where he would leave his physical body and he would find himself in the body of a person in a hospital who was on the verge of death. And although I don't think he was able to animate their body, he had awareness while in these bodies. So, you know, if you think of consciousness as simple energy, you know, and as you said, it doesn't die, I would say it's entirely plausible that a disembodied spirit could enter another physical body and animate it for the purposes of getting attention. Like I said, I don't have any personal experience, but I would say it's entirely plausible.
No, thank you. Interesting. It's like a mystery to me, and something that I feel there's few others that have also said that they've, especially if they've worked in hospitals or nursing homes, that have seen some similar types of things, not necessarily identical to that one, but something that would make you kind of scratch your head a little bit here. So that's very fascinating. So did we delve into, or can we delve more into lucid dreaming? And is it the same as astral travel, or better yet, is an out-of-body experience the same as astral projection? You might have answered this earlier, but can we go back to that one for a second and talk a little bit more about our dream states? Because a lot of people have questions about when they talk to their loved ones in their dreams. They wonder sometimes if they're being visited, or if they're interacting, their conscious is interacting with someone else's deceased conscious. I don't know. What are your thoughts again on, can you give us some idea about lucid dreaming and astral travel?
The way I define it is lucid dreaming is being entirely aware that you're dreaming within a construct of your own mind and your own imagination or creation. An out-of-body experience is any time consciousness is phased away from the physical body. And then an astral projection is an out-of-body experience in what's known as the astral plane. So, and I think they use the term astral, or they use the word projection in the term astral projection, because what we're doing is we're simply projecting our consciousness to a different place than our physical body. So an astral projection is a projection of consciousness into the astral planes, whereas a projection of consciousness into the etheric plane would be simply like an out-of-body experience or something. So not all out-of-body experiences are astral projections, but all astral projections are out-of-body experiences. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me. I mean, I understand. I think that's interesting. I find there's so many questions surrounding, not just surrounding that, but going into that dream state, of course, and wondering, you know, some people will wake up and they'll go, did I actually live through that, or did I actually see that? And their dreams will be so real that they think that they, in their dreams, that they actually experienced what they were viewing. Did we why don't we talk a little bit about awareness, because I know you brought remote awareness up as something that you know about a little bit here. So remote awareness versus consciousness, can you explain the differences in these concepts to our audience?
Are you speaking about remote viewing or remote awareness?
Well, remote awareness, but can you, I think maybe you should clarify that. Is there a difference between remote viewing and remote awareness as you know it?
I believe there is, and many of the people in this field do. Remote awareness or remote viewing is, it's the act of going into a deep meditative state. First, I believe they do what's called a clearing. They clear their mind of all external thoughts and all internal dialogue. And what they do is they connect their consciousness to the collective, and specifically a target. It's not necessarily an out-of-body experience. It can be quantified by quantum entanglement, which is the idea that everything is connected in the universe. Einstein called it spooky action at a distance. It's simply connecting your mind to the collective consciousness and perceiving properties of a specified target, meaning color, shape, texture, and any other information you can gather from the target. So remote viewing or remote awareness is simply creating a mental connection to the collective and trying to describe a remote target. Whereas, let's see here, it was the difference between remote viewing and astral projection or consciousness?
Probably consciousness.
Okay. I would say consciousness is, everything in the universe is conscious. the evolution of a, I believe consciousness is organized energy that has a decision space. So there's varying forms of consciousness. A dog has a limited amount of decision space. An insect has even less amount of decision space. As your consciousness becomes more evolved, you have more decision space. So, you know, everything in the universe is made up of consciousness, and it's a collection of energy that has developed awareness and a certain amount of decision space. So, you know, when we die as humans, I believe if we have, you know, evolved enough or have moved into the next level of our consciousness, we might be able to reincarnate as a more evolved being with more decision space. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. One of the things that keeps swirling in my mind, and if you don't know how to answer this, by all means, so let's go and talk a little bit again about one of the most unusual mysteries of all, and I'm going to go right back to this, the ability of a psychic or a medium to be able to remotely become aware or view maybe or consciously become aware of what your future is, because I find it absolutely baffling how someone you can talk to, who you've never talked to very much at all or ever, can know details about what literally is about to happen to you. And let's say they're tapping into the collective thoughts out there. How on earth are they able to tell you all about your path by use of their awareness or remote awareness or what? Is there any explanation you can give for that, why they have this ability to actually foresee people's futures?
I have theories. There's a guy named Thomas Campbell. He is a retired NASA physicist who's been studying the out-of-body phenomenon for four decades. And he has developed what's called the virtual reality model. And it's the idea that our universe is comprised of a virtual reality, kind of like a video game. And all things that have happened in the past have added to the collective database. All things that are happening now are being added to the collective database. And there's also what's called the future potential database. And the more far out you try to predict the future, the less accurate the information is going to be. The closer to the present you try to predict the future, the more accurate it's going to be. And I believe that's because this gets into an entirely different subject. It involves a combination of using the left brain and the right brain. The left brain is the logical serial processing part of the brain, and then the right brain is the creative, more imaginative part. If you can use the left brain in a logical way and use it for pattern recognition, you can find out, well, if 1 + 1 = 2 10 times in a row, then 1 + 1 is going to equal 2 the 11th time. You use that pattern recognition with your imaginative part of your brain, and you can start to make certain predictions based on past events to make predictions about potential future events. So Tom Campbell calls it the future potential database, and anyone can tap into it, but some people are better at it than others. It's all information and data that's been added to the collective of the universe. And some people just have a better ability to tap into it. What some people think of deja vu is actually a subconscious recollection of a precognitive dream. I've had precognitive dreams before that have actually come to complete fruition. Now, if someone has a dream of a precognitive event and they only remember it on a subconscious level, when that event comes to pass, there's only going to be a slight part of their conscious mind that recalls that event. And then it's going to be enough to trigger something in their mind that says, whoa, wait a minute, I've been here before. I've experienced this. So, you know, I think deja vu is a subconscious recollection of a precognitive dream. You know, and it's all information, and anyone can access it. It just takes a little training. Some people have a more natural capability of doing it, though.
I'm going to add to that. Or maybe I'm going to take it up a notch for you. So when I was in 10th grade, my teacher had said to my class, I have had an experience with deja vu. And of course, we're all learning about what deja vu was. And he told us a story about when he went over to Germany or something like that, and they were on a busy street or on a street, and they were looking for something or looking for a specific place. And he says, yeah, I can tell you exactly where it is. It's around the corner and to the left. Well, he's never been there before. And but he was, I don't know why he knew this or thought this, but he said, boy, I must have been reincarnated because I knew exactly where this place was. It was around the corner and to the left, and it was, but yet he didn't dream it. But when he was over there, it was almost like his gut intuition or something absolutely, spiked. And it was actually the way he described it. So he was trying to teach us about the concepts of deja vu and, you know, past life and all this sort of thing. It was kind of an interesting class. But do you have any thoughts on that? How about people who actually go places and they don't dream, and for some reason they just know exactly where a place is? What about that?
I guess I can't say for sure, but I would speculate that it's probably one of the, it's probably one of two reasons. It's obviously he had a desire to go to this place. Maybe he had an affinity for it because he had lived there in a previous life. Maybe he did know. And then also, it could be construed as a future event that he may have had a precognitive experience about in his sleep that he just didn't quite remember. I can't say for sure, but, you know, those sort of things are, you know, they happen all the time. And I'm sure there's, you know, a couple different reasons why it might happen.
Yeah, interesting. Let's talk a little bit about something you mentioned here about, are we truly multidimensional? I don't know if that falls in line with this, but I think it'd be a good place for it. Explain multidimensional to, or did you already do that when you're explaining the three layers? And go into this a little further, but, and again, one of the questions I have that goes along with this, of course, is do animals experience out-of-body experiences as well? So let's tackle the multidimensional again, or remind us what that is if you've already mentioned it, and then answer the question about do animals experience out-of-body experiences?
Sure. When I say multidimensional, again, it goes back to having different energy bodies or different light bodies. We have the etheric body, which is the life force energy body, the astral body, which is also known as the emotional body, and then the mental body. So we have many aspects of ourselves that we're capable of experiencing. It depends on where our consciousness is phased to. That's what determines what we perceive. So, and all living things have an energy field. I have seen my dogs in an out-of-body state before. I rolled off the side of my couch, and I went and I knelt down. I have a sectional couch, and I went and knelt down, and I put my elbows on the edge of the couch, and I looked out the window. And both my dogs came up on both sides of me and started licking my face. It was amazing. They looked exactly like they do. Well, a little bit younger, but yeah, absolutely. Animals, any living sentient conscious being in the universe has an energetic field. So, you know, and they are conscious as well. Granted, they have less decision space and they're less evolved, but they do have consciousness. And many people who explore the out-of-body state will tell you the same thing, that they've seen their pets and their animals in the out-of-body state. So yeah, absolutely. You know, I've had experiences before where I have, I've had two out of body experiences back to back. The first one, I rolled off the left side of my bed and I walked around to the foot of my bed and I stood there. Then I looked at my body and then I went down and I touched my body and I woke up in my body. And then about 5 minutes later, I went out of my body again, but I was on my bed, on my back, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't move. And out of the corner of my right eye, I saw a black shadowy figure walking around the right side of my bed, and it went around to behind my head. And I was terrified because I couldn't move my head. I didn't know what this thing was going to do. But it came down and it touched me. And then I woke up in my body again. And it wasn't until after I woke up and I started to put the pieces of the puzzle together, I realized what had happened. The first out-of-body experience I had rolled off the left side of my bed and walked around to the foot. And then the second out-of-body experience was me on my bed perceiving my other energetic body from 5 minutes ago. So I had three bodies in one place at one time. I had a physical body on the bed, I had an energetic body on the bed as well, and I had another energetic body walking around the side of the bed. So that's kind of when I started to realize that we truly are multidimensional, and consciousness can be split among many of our bodies. There's a guy named Robert Bruce. He's been doing out-of-body or astral traveling for decades as well. He calls it the mind split effect. It's where your consciousness is split out among many different aspects of yourself. It's a very hard sensation to describe, but it does happen.
That's interesting. I want to move that. That's very interesting. And I was just trying to think about, you know, right now there's so much television programming and dark shadows being seen and all this, and people trying to figure out who the dark shadow is, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, personally, if I would see a dark shadow, even if it was myself, I'd probably still freak out. But the thing is that I want to move that now into what a lot of people listen to this program for is paranormal. Because again, sometimes what may be perceived to be paranormal might actually be, it sounds like, a layer of ourselves. And so I would like to talk a little bit about the paranormal here and ask a question. You have, what do you feel are the natures of ghosts then? And how do you think this might relate to astral projection? Because I think you're just tapping into something here for some of us.
Well, I believe ghosts are disembodied spirits who, for one reason or another, cannot... they either don't know that they're deceased and they're still trying to operate in the physical plane because they either have unfinished business or they want to get the attention of someone. And most ghosts, I believe, are made of what I said was called etheric energy. And what it is, when people have an amputated arm or an amputated leg, you know how they say they can feel a phantom limb? Well, that phantom limb is made up of the etheric residual energy of that limb. And so when the body dies, the consciousness no longer has a physical body to perceive or phase into. So it goes into the next level, which is the etheric body. And what it does is it hangs around for, you know, an undetermined amount of time, does what it needs to do. And eventually, once it realizes, you know, there's nothing left for it down here, it moves on to the next body, which may be the astral body. And then, you know, the consciousness learns what it needs to learn in the astral plane, and then it moves on to the next level, or can reincarnate back down on the planet if it wants. So, you know, some energies are actual ghosts, I believe. But then at the same time, sometimes when we're in our bedrooms and we perceive other energies, it's quite possible it could be aspects of ourselves that are either trying to get our attention, or we might be trying to get our own attention, or possibly helping us. And fear. Fear is always the first order of business when you're learning how to go out of body like this, because these planes are very thought responsive, meaning the physical plane is very dense and change happens at such a slow pace. But in these energetic environments, thought and emotion is almost immediate manifestation. And if we have a lot of fear in our mind, or in our subconscious mind even, we're likely to manifest very fearful apparitions or environments, you know, especially with all the movies coming out, Paranormal, Insidious, all of those movies, they are really trying to push a lot of fear on us. And that is making it into the, you know, subconscious minds of people. And they're starting to be really frightened of these experiences that they really don't need to be frightened of.
I find that interesting. I could probably talk to you about that subject alone for an entire hour here. So I thought, you know, I've got experiences that I could bring in at this point, but due to time and stuff, I'm going to save that one for another discussion with you at another time, because I think that is very, very interesting. Very interesting. Let's move this into, let's talk a little bit about how light body travel benefits humanity, and has it benefited your own path? Let's talk about that.
Before my awakening, I was a very angry, politically polarized person. I was heavily involved in politics. I was very angry at the world. I was bitter. I couldn't understand, why the world was the way it is. And once I had this out-of-body experience, I realized that everything in the universe is energy in varying forms of vibration, and that what energy we put out into the world and what energy we take in really does help to shape the world and shape who we are. So, you know, when someone looks within and they start to connect to the higher part of their mind, a lot of the beliefs and a lot of the superstitions and things that we once thought were important seem to fall by the wayside. Like materialism, racism, hate, anger, it all seems to fall by the wayside. It does crop up, you know, a little bit eventually, because the world we live in is a kind of a strange place that does make a lot of people angry. But I always try to get back to a place where I realize that everything is energy, and what I put out into the world is what I'm going to get back. And so, you know, I believe, you know, if, you know how they say that true change comes within or from within? I think if the world really wants to change itself, we have to stop looking outside of ourselves for the change. If every single individual on the planet looked within and started finding the answers from within, I think we would all connect with each other and find that we have more things in common and we're more connected to each other than we originally thought. It's so much easier to be nice to people walking down the street when you realize that every person you meet is an aspect of yourself, because we are truly all one. And that's one of the realizations that comes with this exploration of consciousness, that we all are part of the same consciousness, living out, you know, independent lives in order to grow and then add to the collective. Because as we grow as individuals, the collective grows in experience as well. So there's so many advantageous things about this out of body travel. There's almost too many to mention, but I think that's a good start.
Yeah, I think I'll have to have you back so we can continue that discussion. And that's very interesting and very true too, because if people were a little bit nicer to each other, maybe the vibration in and of itself in our society would feel a little bit happier than angry or judgmental. Tell us a little bit about this book you're writing. It's called, what is it called? The Light Body, A Vehicle for Consciousness. Any general idea when you might have that book out?
Yeah, I'm looking to have it out by mid-2018. So probably May or June.
Okay, that's great. We'll all have to keep our eyes out for that. I think it's very interesting. So keep writing and evolving it. I think it'll be very, very fascinating. Would you mention, since we're almost out of time here, can you mention your website? If people want to get a hold of you or they want to keep in touch with you about your book, how do they get a hold of you in general?
My website is www.lightbodytravel.com. And my email address is jasonkish@lightbodytravel.com.
Okay, good. Thank you. Jason, do you have any final words to our audience this evening? I think you've had an exceptional interview. I think I've learned a lot from you. And like I said, it certainly earns another round of interviews here in the future. So any final words to your audience here tonight?
I guess I would say that, you know, the next step in evolution is an evolution of consciousness. And as the vibration of the planet increases, so does the vibration of the individuals that live on it. And moving in to ourselves and finding the truth and the answers within is the key to changing the world into the way we want. So I believe that meditation and silencing the mind and taking some time to look within ourselves each day is one of the most important things that we can do.
Sounds good. Well, this idea begins to unfold and progress, again, I'm going to have you back so we can talk a little bit more about it and delve into that paranormal aspect a little bit more heavily too, because I think that in and of itself is very, very fascinating. So thank you very much, Jason, for being our guest this evening.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. So everyone, continue to listen to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. As usual, I hope to continue to entertain you as always. And this shall conclude our interview for this evening. Good night, everyone.